Hello and welcome to the Liberation Podcast, an exploration of what it means when we say our liberation is bound in each other. Through interviews and personal dialogue, we will dissect just how liberation is experienced by the individual and how in result manifests in their communities. Let's get started. Hello, welcome back to the Liberation Podcast. I'm your host, Safara Parrott, and thank you so much for joining me here today. I am geeking and so excited for the guest that I have for y'all today. I am joined today by podcaster, author, yoga practitioner, wellness entrepreneur, and just an abundantly amazing human being, Jessamyn Stanley. Jessamyn is an internationally acclaimed voice in wellness, highly sought after for her insights on the 21st century yoga and intersectional identity. Jessamyn's first book, Everybody Yoga, Let Go of Fear, Get on the Mat, Love Your Body, has inspired global audiences to discover the power of yoga and set forth on a path of personal development. Her highly anticipated second book, Yoke, My Yoga of Self-Acceptance, was released June 22nd of 2021, which is featured a lot in our conversation. I use that very much so as the crux of question asking and kind of developing the conversation around. The book is a series of deeply honest, funny, gritty, and thoughtful, and largely autobiographical essays. It explores the issues of self-love, body positivity, race, sex, and sexuality, and a lot more, all through the lens of her yoga practice and the things that she really embodies personally and through her other avenues of work. Jessamyn is also an award-winning social advocate. She is well-versed on a variety of cultural issues, including modern Black experiences, LGBTQ+ representation, and equity in the health industrial complex, among other things. She is the co-founder of We Go High North Carolina, a Southern cannabis justice organization working to increase cannabis access in prohibition states like hers, and to highlight the natural connection between cannabis consumption and prison abolition. The organization operates on a simple truth: no one should be in jail for weed. Jessamyn is also the founder of The Underbelly Yoga. The Underbelly is a streaming wellness app with digital yoga classes available by web, iOS, Android, Roku, all of the other things that the internet and technology allow. Jessamyn launched The Underbelly to help individuals tune in with themselves and live authentically. The platform is a home for wellness enthusiasts and the wellness curious, who may feel displaced, discouraged, or overlooked due to not seeing themselves reflected in the health and fitness community. The brand has quickly gained notoriety for its inclusive approach towards physical, emotional, and spiritual well-being. I myself have used the Underbelly app and have used different videos and techniques that Jessamyn speaks about both in her book and in the app and different classes that she has done. And it's very life-changing and it's very validating, and I could go on and on about it. But it is, if you are somebody who has been scared or maybe have not felt seen or valid or safe in different wellness spaces, we talk a lot about it in the podcast, in our conversation. The importance of this topic really lends me to say it more than once, but there are so many people, and not just queer and fat or people of color, but also like disabled people, people that have neurodivergency, you know, sometimes meditation and things, like for people with autism or with ADHD or OCD, like sometimes that is just straight up not accessible. And so there are so many techniques that The Underbelly covers, and people like Jessamyn, they cover and make it accessible and try to accommodate and realize and validate all of the people that are not spoken for, spoken to, even acknowledged within some of these wellness spaces. So I am just so excited for you to hear her speak about her work and speak about how radically important this is. Of course, if you would like to support my work or Jessamine's work, all the links will be set below into the show notes. I said on the previous episode, but I will say again, just for clarity, anyone who has been on the Patreon page and has become a patron, payments are going to be paused for just a moment as I restructure how I want to approach the show, what is time and life-giving for me, and just acknowledge that, like, you know, life happens, shit happens. Sometimes finances fluctuate, sometimes things fluctuate, time fluctuates. So in honor of my social contract to the patrons, I'm going to pause payments on those. But if you do feel so led to support this show in any way, links to my PayPal, Venmo, or Cash App is all going to be available down below. And I greatly appreciate it if you would like to sustain the show in that way. Or you can just enjoy it for free and enjoy my sweet voice and enjoy these conversations as I do. And yeah, and everything that is pertaining to Jessamine will be linked in the show notes. The Underbelly yoga app will also be linked, and all the accessibility to learn more about her work and her books, if you'd like to read them, everything will be down below. And so you will be taken care of informationally. I'm not going to hold anybody up any longer. I want to get to it. I'm excited for you all to hear this conversation. Jessamine, from the moment we started talking, was so open and so receptive to some intense questions that I asked her, but also just like it felt like talking to a friend immediately. I have not enjoyed in so much laughter and just in general, just joy in a conversation in so long. No flack to any of my other guests, but it's just a connection that I wasn't expecting and was really humbled by and just really excited by. And I think that even editing the conversation and coming out of the conversation, there were moments while editing that I was like, wow. Like, I felt like I thought I absorbed everything in the moment, and then it really in returning to it, it just blew me away again. So I just abundantly grateful for Jessamine and her work and her receptiveness to our conversation. And I hope that that connects to you all as well. And without further ado, here is my conversation with Jessamine Stanley. Well, Jessamine, thank you so much for being here. Thank you for sharing your time. I am a little geeking right now, I'm not going to lie. I have been following Underbelly Yoga and your work for quite some time now. So I'm like a little geeky that your team responded so quickly. And I was like, oh my God.
Thank you for having me. I'm honored to be here with you, truly.
Yes. Oh my gosh.
Thank you for reaching out.
Yeah. So before we get kind of into the nitty gritty of the other questions I have for you, tell me about how you got into yoga as a specific practice, because I know that you have a background being raised Baha'i. You also have kind of what I would consider maybe a different upbringing than a lot of people that grew up Black in the South, like having a very different spiritual upbringing that I know, I'm sure, naturally drives you to a spiritual practice like yoga. So tell me about, what were those driving factors and what kind of led you to, become a practitioner in those things?
You know, it's interesting to me, and I'm really grateful that you would see the connection between the Baha'i faith and finding a yoga practice, because I did not see that when I was young. And when I started my practice, it had, on the surface, was not a part of it, but absolutely was a driving factor. But it's something that they happened very separate from one another. I was raised in the Baha'i faith, and it was a huge part of my identity. There's no way for me to express the expansiveness of that. It was everything. And up until I was a teenager, and then when I came out, it caused some friction for me, because there are Baha'i writings that can be read as homophobic, and my I was exposed to that at that time. Well, exposed. I looked it up, Virgo rising. And I felt like that meant that I was not a part of the Baha'i faith in the way that I'd always felt connected. And it was a disconnect for me because the Baha'i faith is so inclusive. But I think of it as I wandered. And so that opened me up to so many different things that had been not a part of my Baha'i upbringing, drinking being the biggest thing, I would say. Mm-hmm. And I was going through a period of my life that I think is pretty common for anyone who's in their early 20s or anyone who is just trying to figure out who they are. Mm-hmm. And when I was in graduate school, a friend of mine encouraged me to go to a yoga class with her. And I really was not interested in doing that at all because I had tried yoga when I was in high school, hated it. And I really just thought that it was something that was for thin white women. I didn't think it had anything to do with me. But when I went, I was really turned on by the practice's way of opening my boundaries, like all the different ways that I decided who I was and what I was allowed to do felt negotiable in a way when I was when I started practicing. And it wasn't about like, I didn't feel that it wasn't like, oh, yoga is so like, I immediately connected to it. It was literally like, I was feeling bad about myself and now I'm feeling a little bit better. All of these postures that we're doing are really difficult. Like everything seemed impossible to me, but that's the practice though, truly, is to let it be impossible. And that was very transformative for me and opened me to myself in a way that I maybe had never been, but certainly had not been post-childhood. And so I was not open though to understanding spirituality or the life path of yoga at all initially. And it's because I was not clear about any of the way that Americans in particular approach the South Asian heritage that a Hatha yoga practice really is embedded in.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, is it cultural appropriation for me to even be here? I'm not sure like what this is. I was like, if I do just the physical part, then maybe it's cool. But like, if I am doing anything more than that, then that could be sketch.
Totally.
And so it was years into my practice before I started to really be open to what the practice was unlocking inside of me. And that has, because what I've come to understand is that ultimately, if you are really just embodying that search for balance that yoga is, this like up and down acceptance of good and bad, light and dark, that really has nothing to do with any particular culture. It's not about like, it's not about any one identity. And it always leads you back to yourself. It always leads you back to whatever lives inside you. So it led me back to the Baha'i faith in a way that like, I think was preordained. I think I have been, and I think I continue to wander in the wilderness of life. But like, that so much of that upbringing shows up in the way that I approach my yoga practice. And so even though they happened independent of one another, it is really interesting to me the way that I'm able to find an acceptance of religion and understand it as some, because this is also a part of it, is that I didn't understand religion as and spirituality as being separate from one another. So that has come through the yoga practice being separate from the Baha'i faith for me, but the yoga practice has made space for all things. So
totally.
There's that.
Yeah. That it's funny. I was literally 2 days ago having a conversation with a good, like a group of seven or so people. They, a few of them being in divinity school, either finishing or currently in there. And we were talking about queerness and kind of the coming out and that relationship to religiosity. And a lot of people, my friend said something so amazing. She works for the Trevor Project. And she was saying that for a long time that she, when she realized and came out that she was lesbian, that she felt so much shame that she couldn't be a practicing Christian anymore. And now her like joy is realizing and being able to share information, especially with young queer people, that there are, there will be religious queer people calling into the Trevor Project and things with the same amount, same kind of shame, and her being able to now be like, no, your religion does hold space for you. And like, you do exist there, and your spirituality doesn't have to do with someone else's interpretation of like some dogmatic practice and whatever. And so, yeah, it was just, it's just interesting that I was literally just having that conversation a couple of days ago.
That is exactly right. Mm-hmm. And it's such a, I mean, the issue I think with religion is that it relies on grouping, or the way that we understand it socially is that it relies on us being in a group, which in order for us to survive like this, it is necessary, I think, for us to travel in packs as human beings. Yeah. But at the same time, the group experience, it can be very limiting because it requires that you just all think the exact same thing. And where there is space for, I think that all religion likely offers so much spaciousness for anything and everybody. But because of this need to be in a clique and in a crew and know that people are going to be down for you and ride for you, it becomes like, what rules are we all following together? How are we all abiding? And then bullshit gets in there, that, from my opinion, that's my perspective, bullshit.
Yeah. Okay. So this is actually a really great segue, because so in your book, Yoke, you share a lot in the beginning, well, really throughout the book, pretty candidly about imposter syndrome and kind of the, and you place that within discussion of like people performing, especially you spoken about yourself kind of performing yoga, but again, like not tapping into the spirituality of it. And you also make observations about like American Western practice yoga, and making clear that there's the one sensation of performing, kind of by result also creates like where you have to, you feel imposter syndrome. But you then like kind of combat those themes, in discussion of a process of unmasking and finding your inner instrument. So I wanted to ask you, how do you feel that shame lays center of imposter syndrome and subsequently performance? And what does your practice, or what does your process of working through and deconstructing those experiences look like within your practice?
Mm-hmm. These are incredible questions. Thank you so much for being such an just incredible interviewer.
Yeah, thank you.
I think that shame is one of the most important experiences of my life. I think that is one of the most important sensations. Like to actually feel like scalding and to actually be able to idea a shame and to not project it onto anyone else.
Yeah.
And to just actually bear it, and that it has nothing to do with doing anything right or wrong. That it's just one of the feelings that happens in this life. And it is, I think, absolutely at the heart of imposter syndrome. And there is a fear of experiencing shame, for me anyway. And the fear of experiencing an emotion or experience that will lead me to do, I think it leads all of us to to put everything in boxes and pretend that things are not happening. So I think sometimes you might even know, you might not even know you have imposter syndrome because it's so deeply buried, like out of fear of really feeling it. And I have experiences every day that call me to engage with this, especially the more that my, work requires that I be in service of other people, especially in team building. It is necessary for me to really sit with imposter syndrome, to like just let it be there. That's my, so you asked about my process. That is my process. It's just let it be there. Like, it can be, Virgo rising will spend all day trying to ID, where did it come from? How can we get rid of it? What am I doing wrong? Why am I even experiencing this? Like, why am I such a fuck up that this is happening to me? Yeah. My life could be so different. You know, all of these laundry list of boxes to check off. And the part of me that just says, you just need to feel this. Just feel it. Just let it be there and stand in the heat of it and let your skin peel off the layer that is so, feels so important and so like the identifying factor, the one thing that matters. Let that part peel off and see that beneath that, you are brilliant light, a light beyond color, something that is not even about what anyone else on this physical plane could understand. You are that brilliant, luminous, glowing all the time. And just let that be there. And that being is brand new, fresh out the oven. So that being is gonna fall down. That being does not know the next step. That being makes mistakes. And that's okay. And you let that be there. And I think I do that about 100 million times every day. And that's my process, and that is how that goes. And but now I think I feel gratitude in a way that I have never in my life before. Feel like thank you for the lesson. In Oprah's book, What I Know For Sure, she talks about this a time she was having a hard time in her life, and she was talking to she was crying to Maya Angelou. And she, Maya Angelou was like, say thank you. And Oprah was like, what am I saying thank you for? And she was like, you're saying thank you for the lesson. Say thank you. And that is, I think about that all the time. Like, just say thank you. Like, whatever. Because there are so many reasons for the imposter syndrome. And I think, like, I will get caught up on the reasons, like why as a Black woman, as a queer person, as a fat person, like why society has made it, like maybe I didn't come made to order with this imposter syndrome, but it was microchipped very early. And like, I can point a finger and blame every single being who is, and also the individuals who are doing it on a day-to-day basis. And still that is just, thank you. Thank you. Only gratitude.
That made me emotional. Imposter syndrome is something that I think I have felt it for a really long time, but I had no language for it or like a real ability to like just name what it is. And I think it's been like a year and a half now that I've had like a real first sit down with it. And it's only now that realizing how many times you actually have to do it, as opposed to being like, okay, I did it one time. Solved it. Imposter syndrome, never heard of her. Like, we're done. Bye. Delete it. But it doesn't do that. And you can try to will it away, but that will not happen. But,
I think it's like, you know how some things taste really great, but it's only because there are some random ingredients in it. And like, if even one of those ingredients was gone, it would not taste as good. And I feel that way about life in this whole experience of it. It's like, it's gotta have this like fucking unctuous, like imposter syndrome is like a mildew flavor or something. It's like something so rank, but it's just like that shade of it makes the whole dish, like actually accepting it and being like, you know what? I'm gonna find the balance of this. Like where, what little, like think iota little teensy bit adds to this. But like trying to pretend like it's not there or like not have it, it's just, it doesn't taste as good, I think.
Yeah, or it spoils the whole dish.
Oh, no, exactly. Or it spoils the whole dish. Exactly. Right. Then you're just eating fucking bathroom bottom, literally.
Yeah, not bathroom
bottom. Totally.
Okay. Ugh. So we live in a specific era of a time in which people like yoga instructors and a lot of wellness gurus, very like air quote to guru, because that's also like a racist term for anyone to use that's not a Southeastern descent. But a lot of yoga instructors and gurus have like waitlisted studios, hundreds of thousands to millions of followers, and platforms that are really unprecedented. And it would be easy for anyone to feel very ungrounded within that. I feel like you hear stories, especially where you hear stories over and over and over again of people really kind of like, it's like snake oiling their whole practices. And like it being a like a whole like very schmucky and like just, it's a whole Ponzi scheme, essentially.
Ooh, that was excellent. That's exactly right. I'm just like, come on, that's right. Yes. Come on, snake oil.
Yes.
Absolutely.
So people that are authentically trying to engage in this industry, it's fairly easy to become ungrounded and lost within a space of internet culture, which would require people to like meditate on sacredness and meditate on things that keep them centered in reality, and allows for growth. And I know that you've spoken a lot about, or there was a really great part of your book that talked about sacredness and sacred text. So I would like, if this isn't too personal of a question, because I don't want to like prod at someone's spirituality too much. But how do you define sacredness, and where or what do you find sacred or a source of guidance within your yoga instruction, or just within a world that requires you to balance so many things like media presence, your own practice, entrepreneurship, etc.?
Thank you so much for asking.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know that I have a definition of sacred that uses words. And this is really the reason I think that the way
it's really metaphysical.
It's totally.
Not, yeah.
But it's like, I'm thinking, yeah, exactly. But I'm thinking about it in the way that like why using Sanskrit is so hard, or like why it is so, the line of appropriation that it rests on. And I think that a huge part of it is that the language is literally way more expansive than what many of us are, how I was trained to understand words. And so when you say even the word, like namaste, I think is a great example of a word that has a very vast definition that expands beyond words, but it gets constrained under the pressure of the words. So sacred for me in this category, I'm like, well, fuck, I don't even know how I would define that. Like sacred, I mean, what comes up for me first is everything that you hold close, everything that is everything. I think even saying interior is too specific. It's like everything, it's just everything you hold close and everything that I hold close. And what is sacred to me, there is so much that is sacred to me and so much that is crucial in order for me to be how I am in this life and to also live the identity of, I would say entrepreneur being the first word, because I don't even like, yoga teacher feels like somebody else. Like I have to say it because it's the easiest way to describe what someone would come to me for. But like at the same time, I'm like, I'm not teaching fucking anybody. I'm literally just existing. I'm just trying to, I practice at a minimum, at a maximum. And so embodying this idea of like an entrepreneur means that I have to be very conscious of what I hold sacred and what is immediately surrounding me. And that has motivated many major decisions in my life, recent major decisions. Like, for example, my partner, my creative partner and romantic partner, we decided to start full-time RVing this past year and have lived on the road. And that decision for me, a huge part of why I did it was wanting to live smaller and live closer to the earth and to be able to return to nature as much as possible. And there are, I could have a whole other thing about like everything, every decision that led to that. But like, I think that it is so easy for me in particular to be consumed by that which greed creates and that which materialism creates and manifests naturally as a part, literally what to be material. Like it's so, I think that as a person who, if my entrepreneurial pursuit is going to involve spirituality or involve engaging with other people in that way, I have to be coming from a place of oneness within myself. Like I can't be trying to, it can't be about any other human beings, literally. Like it can't. So that has also motivated, like for a long time I lived in Durham, North Carolina, and I'm from Greensboro originally, and I felt very happy to be based in North Carolina because I feel like, first of all, people keep it real in the South in general in a way that they don't they other sure places. Do. You know, like to a fault, like to a pain point. But I would so much rather, I was just talking to somebody about this last night. I would much rather you show me your Confederate flag and let me know where I can't be than
100%
than write it on your spirit. And then I'm over here trying to have dinner and you're tripping. So
100%.
I'm like, I appreciate the honesty of the South. And also like North Carolina is where my people were held in bondage and where I feel that we have a rightful stake to the land and that I like to be a part of what we are building and holding together. And so that felt very sacred to me, very important. And something that it's like an ownership of self. But now just being able to like literally get in the water sometimes and like put my feet in the grass and be in the sun and not live around a lot of people, like, and not be trying to like, I don't really like to engage with people that much. I'm very introverted and like would much rather just be keep to myself with the people that I love and that I'm grateful to be able to be close with, but not really anybody else. And like, even in teaching live classes, like this is a, it's a whole spiritual question for me at this point, because there's the dynamic that happens in a live environment, I think feeds the ego in a way that I am vulnerable to just like anyone else. And I think 100%. It's something for me to be mindful of in my personal practice. And so wanting to know the reason why I am teaching live, and why am I holding space with people? And is that really an offering to another human being? So,
totally.
But like letting all of those questions be there. And there are many things. So in the book, in Yoke, I talk about like sacred texts and finding the books that really make a difference or that hold me down. And there are so many different, everybody has books that are like sacred texts. And that was a huge thing for me, like separating spirituality and religion. Because as a kid, I always thought that like a sacred text is a religious book. And now it's like, that's true, yes, but anything can be a sacred text. If it speaks to your, any human, if a being, another living being, put pen to paper and put some shit down, that is a sacred, that is their spirit spilling forth. And so anything is sacred text. And there's so many books that make that for me, and music in the same category. And there are so many different materials that also go along with that. Crystals, herbs, the practices themselves, journaling, tarot is a huge part of it for me, being able to pull cards, and also astrology is a big part of that as well. And just knowing about what's going on with the planets. But there's not, I mean, all of that is kind of like external ultimately. Like I feel like the connection to the earth is so important, because we are the earth. No matter where 100%. You no matter where you're from or what you do, you came from dust, you return to dust. And so to me, to be able to just walk amongst that which is organic, that is, that feeds my sacredness.
Well, thank you for sharing all that. I know that's, it's hard to pinpoint something that is so personally felt and so like physiologically felt, that I mean, to put words to that is difficult, but I asked the question anyway, so I appreciate you answering in a very intentional way. But when you were talking about, I remember when I read Yoke and you were talking about sacred texts, and I've stepped away. I was raised like non-denominational, which is also kind of just code for Baptist anyways, but generally is pretty much code for Baptist. And so I stepped away from Christianity like almost 10 years ago, which is, it's fine. No hatred about it, but no hard feelings. Not going to try to take it away from anyone either. But I have always, I grew up playing music, still play music, write about music all the time. And so that, like, music and albums and things like that became very sacred to me. Like,
I'm so curious what some of your like go-to sacred albums are.
I don't know if I necessarily have albums that are sacred to me anymore. I think I used to a lot. It's way more of where I can like center myself within music and how I can express myself through different artists, or like what artists bring out in me, is what is more. Sometimes if I listen to someone like Jose Gonzalez, it's going to be a lot more who truly, that's, I swear to God, that's what my soul sounds like. But his music is very, channels a very soft introspection as opposed to analytical and kind of name-call-y introspection. And so I feel way more almost immediately meditative, but in a very soft and like kind of like just like scoop myself up in a very, in a way. So it's more of the sacredness comes from how can I express myself, and how can I feel kind of the vibrations between me and the things that are being said and expressed aligning. Again, very hard to describe, but with words. But and also Audre Lorde is, poetry is not a luxury, and Your Silences Will Not Save You are, I think I returned to those two essays. I don't know. It's, I had to buy a new copy of Sister Outsider because I wrote in it so much. And I think I'm just going to end up having a stack of them with all, like, I should date them with notes.
Oh, yes. Oh, my God.
I should put dates on them of, like, what I was going through and why I underlined specific things. Because I'm on book two now.
Literally. Oh, my God. Can you please? Literally. Yeah. It's just, like, date the dates that you had the first copy. Like, oh, my God. Just,
yeah.
Oh, I feel you. Ooh, that'd be so satisfying later. Absolutely.
I feel like it would. Sister, I also have ADHD, so I'm probably never going to do it.
Mm-hmm. No, totally. Well, there's that. I don't know if you're Aquarius rising, and I guess we'll never know. Man,
I know. Ooh,
so interesting.
You
I
can
love
say
that.
I am, and I'll say, okay.
Yeah, your background is beautiful. Yes.
Sounds good.
That means you probably are then. No, but the that about Sister Outsider. I, in the Toni Morrison documentary, which
one?
It's like the pieces of me.
Oh, yeah. My God.
I remember, I cannot remember which poet was talking about how, like, you should read The Bluest Eye at every part of your life. And mm-hmm. I was thinking, like, that would be such a cool thing. Not with, like, that whole concept of, like, have just the dating, I just think is so lovely. Yeah.
So I watched an interview of you on Here and Now. And I'm going to correct myself. I watched elements of an interview that you did with Here and Now. Because there was an hour and a half and I did not want to watch the whole
literally
thing. But I came up to a part that reminded me of your book. And there was like a through line between your answer that you gave in this interview and something that you talked about in your book. And they kind of tied with like fear that people hold about themselves. And then the through line being the discussion of radical self-acceptance in yoke. And, a lot of it where I found the connection between the two things has to be centered in trust, and gut intuition. And I am wondering how yoga in itself your practice, if it does live in your practice, but how does yoga inform and allow for someone to sit in authenticity with themselves? And then how does one build a relationship of trust and understanding with themselves?
This is like the $1 million question. I feel like that's what everybody's trying to, it's like, so how 100%. Do you trust yourself?
Right. Like,
I'm figuring it out. No, I feel like so much of it. Well, okay. So the question is like, how does yoga do this? Or does yoga do this? Is that, am I at the.
Yeah, essentially you can interpret it that way. That's fine. No, that absolutely. Sounded like a read. I am so sorry.
Well, I'm going to start.
That
I'm
was
gonna
so
start
mean.
There. You're good. I'm going to start there and I'm going to.
That's
see
absolutely
where it
fine.
Goes.
Yes.
So. I think that yoga really requires that you keep it real no matter what. Mm. Like, it's not, you can bullshit or you can't, and that is your yoga. That is still in and of itself truth to bullshit. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, you are going to be asked to hear yourself, to really, and not to hear you. There's no teacher, there's no words, there's no like guided meditation that's going to like perfectly unlock it. There's no like specific, if you do this every single day, then like you'll always do. No, it's got to be like literally just feeling, tuning. And so the reason that there's so many different styles of yoga and so many different ways of approaching it, literally a different way for every single being in this universe, is that that experience of listening to yourself is not going to be the same for everybody. And it's not going to be the same every day. Mm-hmm. And I find that it is very helpful for me to make my physical body incapable of doing anything else. So the physical body, I think, will try to find a way to loophole so that like, you can eat, like your brain will try to find a way to control everything.
Totally.
And being able to see, let the brain get tired, let your physical body just be tired.
Mm-hmm.
That for me is a crucial part of being able to actually hear myself. So like that can happen in a lot of different ways. And I mean, yeah, posture, practicing yoga postures, I think is really helpful for that, but it's not the only way to go about that. It's just it's a day by day journey of figuring out like what the right alchemy is.
Yeah. Something that you, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. Something that I appreciate, you and there are plenty of people that will encourage this, but you encourage listening to yourself. If you are sitting in one position and that's all that your body wants to sit into, like allowing that and also allowing anything that comes up within that position or that, however you're breathing or whatever, allowing that to come in as well, which I did kind of naturally, one day, and it just like completely changed everything about like listening to myself, of just sitting in that position and just breathing into it for however long.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. That's exactly right. Because once you find whatever the shape is, because literally if you exist, you're in a yoga posture, you're in a posture. So like you find whatever the shape is that you need to, and then it is the breath moving through you. And the breath is really the key to, the breath is the voice, the breath is the intention, the gut check, the everything. So that's why, we always say that if you can breathe, you can do this practice, because like, that's the only thing that's needed. So like you feel this connection to the breath that is everything. It's the trees. It's the other animals. It's the ocean. It's everything. And so breathing and connecting to that life force that is eternal and exists beyond any physical matter or physical body, that is what you're trying to actually hear or listen to. And so I think that if you're trying to like find a connection to that gut check or to that, to your intuition or to the truth, that finding the breath in whatever position makes the most sense is the way to go about it. And that is, and also accepting that that is going to change every single day of your life for always. For however long you have this meat suit.
I love what you said about allowing yourself to get tired. I recently had a necessary movement into kind of advocating for myself within some family structures, and the aftermath of that, it went fine, but the aftermath of it mentally, I remember sitting in therapy and like being so like, it felt like my brain was like a pile of mush, because you don't realize how exhausted you've been for so long holding on to so many things, especially if you are like me and just have an obsessive compulsion to just think about the thing that's bothering you over like forever and ever and ever until it like is a monster that's just like standing next to you the whole day. And so like, yeah, I just remember sitting in therapy and I was like, I don't even think I can like fucking talk. Like I can't like not only just not talk about anything, but like physically, I feel like I just can't. I just need to sit silently and stare at a wall or just breathe or do something, because like I have not allowed my brain to feel exhausted for so long. And then it's just like, it took literally until like a couple of days, that was like a solid 2 weeks ago. And now I'm like, in the last couple of days, I've been like, all right, now we can, let's pick up and start doing some stuff again. Like, let's start doing some whatever and start like some healing processes or whatever. Cause you can't even, I couldn't even fathom the energy to do that. Like, not literally. Even, I remember telling my therapist, being like, so what do I do? Heal now? Like, I don't, like, I can't do that shit right now. Absolutely. What did your therapist not say? She laughed. the one time she laughs at anything I say.
Exactly. Totally. Amazing. Oh God, I love that.
Yeah. So something that serves as, I think, a general mission of yours, or maybe not even a mission, I think more maybe in speaking to you, it seems more appropriate to say just like an embodied living or an embodied purpose of your writings and your yoga work and your entrepreneurship is accessibility, and kind of intentionally honoring that the practice of yoga is for a spiritual centering, and or it kind of relies on spiritually centering yourself and a relationship and like one's relationship to themselves, and how it can change you and all these things. So how, like, as a queer and Black fat person, how does that, like, advertised, like the narrow advertising of American yoga affect people like you, POC, queer, fat, low income as well, because that is a huge part of it, is a very class divisionist. How does that affect, how is all of those narrowed narrowed perspectives of American wellness system, industrial complex, if you want to call that. How does it affect those people? And then why is it so necessary to flip the script and create spaces and practices for wholeness and like liberation and this whole movement of liberating these kind of spaces?
Another $1 million question.
Yeah.
I mean, I really feel like we can never look to whiteness to support us. We can never look to white supremacy for any, white supremacy does not seek our salvation. There's nothing about those who are marginalized who are meant for us to strive or to succeed in white supremacy. So I don't, excuse me, I think it is, on the topic of let me fly your Confederate flag so I can know where not to be. I'm like, don't say, what bothers me more now is the number of brands and studios and companies, like just beings who are trying to trick marginalized people into finding community in spaces where it is not safe for us to be. And we are spiritually vulnerable in those spaces and then have to bear the impact of that on our own.
Yeah, which— I didn't even think about that, even though I put it in the question of like, you are spiritually vulnerable in that moment as well, not just physically.
In any, I mean, you could go to like fucking CrossFit and be like, yeah, I'm just trying to like have a good time, but like in that environment you're spiritually vulnerable, and like if the space is not being held for you to live your best life, to be your best self, then you're gonna have to bear the weight of that. And ultimately, like, the yoga practitioner in me would argue that is your yoga, that is your experience, that is your truth. So you have that experience. But at the exact same time, I'm like, we need spaces where all of us can just feel like it's okay to be and not have to explain ourselves, like not have to be like, this is why I deserve to exist. This is a huge realization for me in my yoga practice, was just how much I think I don't deserve to exist. So like any space that is encouraging that, like, that's, we don't need to be there. And and I think that there's also there has to be an ownership of us, you know, not being one unit of those who seek to heal, like and like finding community in that, because I think that it's really easy to get held by wanting to find exactly the right
pegs, like the right boxes to be in or something. So like, but I say that, and then at the exact same time, I'm like, we need spaces that are specifically like BIPOC only, like BIPOC queer people only, like not any kind of, and it has to be created by us. That's what's so crucial, is that we have to be supporting each other and supporting that kind of community building. Because if it is, if we look to white supremacist systems to support us, we're just going to be looking forever. And so when we are supporting each other, I think it is so important that we support each other, that we support, and I mean, I think I'm being a little bit vague, but like supporting BIPOC owned, queer owned, disabled owned businesses that do this, and that are making these structures outside of white supremacist structures. I think that is so crucial.
Yeah, 100%. And it's, I feel like it, fatness plays such a key role in this too, because I feel like people are less, I'm gonna envision myself as a thin white woman for a moment. I feel that if I were in a yoga studio, I am more threatened, or I feel more, I feel that like the space is, I don't care if someone's gay and practicing next to me, because gay isn't visible. I am more, I feel a more, again, speaking as a white woman, I am feeling
love this more personality you're putting on.
Thank you. I grew up with one, so I feel like I can embody it very well.
Absolutely. Oh, you better own that shit. That's exactly right. That's exactly, you're like, bitch, I was here the whole time. I know. Please continue. I'm sorry.
God, literally.
But I also feel like it is easy to be colorblind in that situation. I feel like fatness is something that is, you cannot turn a blind eye to. If I am a person that is, systematically, I have looked at you as not equal and also not worth being in my space, not valued in my space, all of those things, because this is something that you quote unquote chose to be. And so I feel that like I myself has have also been like really trying to radically debunk and decolonize my internalized fat phobia, and also just the fat phobia that I unknowingly have expressed and whatever live within, because we live in a white supremacist world. So there you go. But I can physically feel like eyes on me when I think about being a fat person in a yoga studio. And I just feel that, that's such a key element of like the education of fatness, and the acceptance of fatness is so crucial to so much of wellness. Because you don't realize how nasty and how like vile and awful someone can be until they start saying anti-fat stuff. And where it's like, oh wow, you have a lot of hatred in your heart. Why? Towards fat people. Why?
What a great question. Why would you say that? What's your answer to that question?
What's my answer to that question? Yeah, yeah. As a white woman, or just
as a coat of many colors, like as you're playing right now. Yes. As a being.
I think when people look at fat people, I think they are, this is going to sound so weird. It's not that, absolutely in no case does obesity lead to mortality. That's not what I'm saying. But I feel that they are looking at mortality, and that scares the shit out of them. And I think that people develop such a hatred for a physical manifestation of everything that they're afraid of. And that is tripled if you're Black or a person of color and queer and fat. That's tripled the amount of fear. Because it, I was also just talking about this with the same friends. We were talking about queerness and faith. Because that makes them have to question, if I'm accepting them into my yoga space and my space of wellness and spirituality, that means I have to adjust and look at every single relationship I have.
Mm-hmm.
Every single one of them.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right.
And so I think there is such a foundational fear that's there. And also, if you're also thinking about the state and the society in which we live in, which is predominantly white and oppressive as fuck, there are, as white people, majority of them in this country coming from colonizers, there's a specific part of you that you have to cut off to enable colonization and to push forward capitalism and all of the hatred that goes upon that, to approve and assure genocide of people and mass migration. You have to cut off a level of humanity to yourself to allow for that to happen. And I think that anytime somebody's trying to express their liberated self or even try to attain a version of themselves, because like you did not tap into the spirituality of yoga for a minute and you had to return to Baha'i and you had to return to so many things. So even you physically being there, even though you weren't necessarily tapped into a specific vibration of spirituality in that moment, you were still claiming a mat in that space. You were claiming an area of that space. And that, to a white cis person, is too much.
Yes, that is exactly right.
And that's not the space that they agreed on sharing upon. Sorry for that.
The thing that is most interesting to me about all of that, starting with the question of mortality, is that we all gonna die. Everybody
100%.
Is. We are all mortal. Mm-hmm. And so they're looking at themselves. They're mm-hmm. seeing mm-hmm. their truth mm-hmm. in mm-hmm. the fat body, in the person next to them that they're like, yeah, I didn't sign up for this shit. I didn't sign up to mm-hmm. have my mat rolled out next to a fat person.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, I'm sure you didn't sign up to experience your truth, but you're gonna mm-hmm. right now. This is mm-hmm. your yoga right now.
Mm-hmm.
And that experience of like having to, that's what I always feel with people who are fat phobic, is that they hate themselves and they dislike themselves so deeply that they have to dislike everybody else as well. And if you see someone who is fat, you feel like they're breaking rules that you've decided are important. And so how dare they break those
rules? Or they think of themselves above the rules.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. They're at a minimum the judge, jury, executioner, and they decide who gets to be here. Mm-hmm. And it's just, I think at this place, it's just compassion. Like just being able to see that, like, every person who is just like openly fat phobic, like that's an experience. I definitely understand that experience. To your point earlier, like about recognizing your own internalized fat phobia. I don't know if that was white woman who was saying that. I thought that was you, but maybe I can't.
You know,
was that her?
Unfortunately, we share the same voice sometimes.
Heard. Okay, cool. So
not intentionally. Somebody, we're trying to decolonize her too.
Totally. Somebody over there was talking about internalized fat phobia, and I relate to that deeply. And it's just like noticing that and not even like trying to fix it or change it. I think that's the trick of healing, is like not like really trying to fix it, kind of making it okay that it's there, and then it goes away over time. It's like it becomes less important over time. Which maybe is actually how all healing works, even physical healing. But I know that's how that's working for me.
Totally. Well, those are all the questions that I had for you.
Look at us making the questions. Yes. In the time period.
At the exact time period. We love that.
Hell yeah. Me too.
Thank you. Well, thank you very much.
It was a pleasure. Let me know if you need anything else, but otherwise I'll leave it to everybody else to make shit
happen. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Thank you again to Jessamine for just honestly in multiple ways. Like I said in the intro, when I came back to edit the conversation and put the episode together, I literally found myself saying like, wow, or like really getting hit again with some of the words that she was saying and some of the points, especially about sacredness. And that chunk of the conversation has really just like created such new grounding for the way that I absorb content, the way that I think about the things that I place into my life, the language that I use, the things that I reference, and the things that I hold in reverence of importance. And I, yeah, it just, that good 20 minutes of time, just like really, I'm so appreciative of it. And I hope that all of you also received as much as I received from this conversation. Again, I can't just thank Jessamine enough for that. And all information, as I said before, is going to be linked below. Links to her organizations, to her Underbelly yoga app, her website, all the things are going to be provided below. If you would like to support the show as well, links to my PayPal, Cash App, and Venmo are going to be below. And yeah, that is it. That is all I have for you. I hope this was just a blessing to your day, as it was for me. Have a good one. Bye-bye.